Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Dr. Karen DeSalvo, National Coordinator for Health IT within the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. So, Dr. DeSalvo, you mentioned interoperability, that seamless exchange of secure health data across all stakeholders. It is at the heart of your overall effort. What are some of the critical barriers to achieving the goal of nationwide interoperability, and how are you working to overcome those barriers?
We laid out a vision and a work plan that had five areas that we thought would be necessary to tackle in order to achieve interoperability. And we wanted to get to a place where that we reached a tipping point in data flow in the healthcare system within 3 years, in a broader ecosystem that was the healthcare system, but was more inclusive of consumers and public health and others by 6 years, and then by 10 years, what we call learning health system, where information moved as seamlessly as it does in many other sectors of our life, whether that's telecom or financial or getting an airplane ticket. That sounds like a long time to some folks, but it's a big system. It's about it's almost a fifth of our economy. There's a lot of things to move. Our work there is about the standards and technology. So, how are we going to collect and report out on things like systolic blood pressure or heart rate to make sure it's the same everywhere? How are we going to certify that products are doing that? What is the way that we're going to protect privacy and security? And then how will we see that we have a business environment, a payment environment that supports a long-term sustainable infrastructure? Think about utilities or roads or railroads that require some money to pay for. And then the final area is the governance. How do you define the rules of the road and what happens when people violate them? So how do you decide whose data gets in, what kind of data gets in, and if somebody misuses the data for some purpose, what would be the consequences therein? I think the biggest challenge in all that, Michael, is the governance and policy piece. Mm-hmm. The privacy security pieces are hard, but there's so much best practice. The hardest part there is going to be alignment across the states. People may not know that there was a time when railroad gauges were not standardized, and so the rail line would end at the state line, and you'd have to move the cargo from one train to another because the rail tracks were not the same gauge. We want to fix all that at the state level, but it's the governance piece and how we're going to pay for it that we're in the throes of working on and having some good conversations about who should be at that table. And I'll tell you why it's hard. It's hard because we are still in this country thinking of health IT and interoperability as being for healthcare system. And so the tables that we have sat include payers and providers. There's very little consumer voice, and this new internet of all the things in the ecosystem are not at the table. And so there's an imbalance about the problem we're trying to solve and what success looks like. So that's our big conversation. The technology is going to come.
Well, that's why I have a question. I'm going to skip ahead because I was thinking, to what extent is what you're doing and charged with a social change project rather than simply a complex technology project? To what extent is it more social change?
Oh, it's both. I would say very smartly, a couple of the national coordinators who preceded me understood that this was about culture and social change. Blumenthal, in particular, when he was designing the grant programs, thought a lot about how regional extension centers and the Beacon grants, as examples, were going to drive social change. I was a Beacon grant recipient on the other end in New Orleans on the steering committee. We was part of writing the grant and then executing it. We literally had fights about things that you can't imagine that people would get so geeked out and fight about, but we did. You know, what is the definition of diabetes? You'd think this country had worked all that out, and we have not. And it really, and who are our patients, and how are we going to define that? Is it, do you have to live in this what we call parish or equivalent to county? Those are questions about responsibility and accountability. And the way we have structured health and healthcare in this country, there are big gaps in responsibility and accountability. Healthcare systems know which patients are there. Sometimes they share with other people. But only about 200 out of 1,000 people in a given year actually use the healthcare system. So there's vast numbers of people who only public health is accountable to, right? They're the ones that we're trying to care for. So that, again, another thing about setting the table. So the social change work is, and the culture change is, I would say major challenge. I'm encouraged because there's a lot of shared interest. back to this notion of what is the ONC structure going forward when we talk about how we need to be a coordinator and a convener of stature. Those are the kinds of roles that we play in trying to drive hard conversations. And I say often, and I still say that we're going to have – right now we've been having a lot of nice conversations about interoperability. Everyone agrees, and I think that's a problem because it means that I haven't gotten to the place.
Yeah, the nerve.
That's right. And we really kind of hit the nerve a few weeks ago with governance because that's when you're really saying, what are we trying to solve? And do we all agree where we're going? So we'll have to spend a few months really.
And what happened with that conversation around governance and the rules of the road? Have you come up with anything yet?
We're still in the midst of it. Yeah, we had some feedback from our FACA, very 100,000 feet. We've been working on some other conversations through we have a contract through MITRE who brought some folks together trying to pull it down to 50,000 feet. And there's some straw men that we're working on developing. This is an ongoing challenge because we need to decide, country, again, what is the problem we're trying to solve and what does success look like? And this is for me about getting people to remember or to learn, whichever one it is, that we're not talking about getting two electronic health records to talk to each other. That's an institutionally and product-focused conversation. What we're talking about is how to paint a picture of somebody's healthcare and health experience, a person, every American, every person in America, if I could. And that is a different conversation. It's a different look on the world. It's different people at the table. So, yes, and I don't think we're there yet. We're moving in that direction, but we're not quite there yet. Here's the thing. When you talk to – there are major companies in this country – that are either product developers or providers who are thinking about the person at the center and not the institution. They're creating what some people call longitudinal health records, lots of names for those, like a registry, which people are really comfortable with, but not just about your diabetes or your heart failure, about everything about you and your own data. So it's happening. It's being developed by the marketplace, which is why I keep pushing our FACAs and our team and the other federal partners to see that on the horizon. And to try to get ahead of it and not just be thinking about two EHRs talking to each other. That's one of many things that we have to solve.
You kind of hinted at it, but I'd like to transition to the future. What are some of the major opportunities and challenges you think you'll face in the health IT area?
Well, I think there's an evolving conversation about privacy, about data. Big data is sexy and everybody wants to use it for all host of purposes. It is possible to merge data sets in such a way that you can tell a lot of things about a person based on what they're buying on the internet or where they live, much less their healthcare. That can be very helpful. There's also the potential it could be harmful. And some of the data that gets merged in with health data is non-HIPAA covered. It doesn't fall under the privacy laws. And so we're having this meshing of information about people. And the White House put out a paper a few months ago on big data, and we ONC have been hosting a set of conversations about big data and privacy to follow on and understand what are the bounds of this and what are the expectations of the people we're here to serve, consumers, about their own use and reuse of data. Informed consent is something we're not great at yet as a country. We have consent, but if you have limited English proficiency or you are disabled in other ways, if you have changing life circumstance that might make you want to change your consent policy, we don't have a flexible enough system. So I think those are big thorny issues that we need to work on because our technology in the case of analytics and big data is ahead of the use case piece is ahead of what we can do for protection. I think that we have a power shift happening between consumers and innovators on the one hand and the healthcare system on the other. Another surprise since I got here is how frustrated consumers are with the healthcare system. I mean, something you know, but you can see it. I can see it in a different way, and I see it everywhere I go, and I hear it everywhere I go. They want their data. They don't want to. They think there's too many steps for them to get permission and to get it to them. They want access to better care, and they want to know it's better care. They want transparency about what they're buying with their nickels, or their dollars, or their bigger monies. They have an expectation, no matter almost age, about convenience that is not come into the world of healthcare. We are still wanting people to come to our institution at our hours that we define in healthcare. I'm still talking like a doctor, and we want to hold the data. And so there's a lot of innovation happening in the consumer and innovator market that's just about availability and accessibility and convenience. You know, telehealth and electronic scheduling and pop-up clinics that are in. I'm going to say strip mall, but on street corners. And I don't want to name particularly companies, but there's a lot of that. And then there's retail healthcare. This dynamic is, I think, that these two things are running side by side, and the healthcare world is trying to get itself digitized and understand how it's going to share information and be more patient-centered and pushed out to community. Consumers are increasingly just trying to create their own system on the side. Now, where this gets really interesting is, and you can see it, there's a couple of touch points where we've done some work on like open notes and whether when a doc writes a note or a nurse, it's mostly physicians, but writes a note, if that's available for full view to the person whose note it is, the patient. Most doctors are pretty uncomfortable with that until they start to experience it, and then they know that, oh, it's actually good. But this is the second iteration of that is what some consumers are expecting, which is not just that I, as a doctor, would write a note and show it to you, open a window so you could see it. That's one whole sort of power cascade. But that you actually have a chance to contribute to the note, you as a patient. And you have the opportunity to make comments on the note that will be a part of the record and say the doctor was actually didn't have this right. I did not have my gallbladder taken out, or I did have my gallbladder taken out, or they forgot to ask me if my husband had just died and that's why I'm tired. It's not because my thyroid's out of whack. It's because I'm depressed. Those are conversations that most physicians have with their patients in the exam room, but every now and then it doesn't work quite right and patients want to be able to correct their record or to add information. And so the technology increasingly allows it. There's some thorny issues there about data provenance, where did it come from? But on the other hand, I think that's also, again, as you say, it's not just technology. This is about how the healthcare system and the people that it's there to serve, the consumer, the patient, call them whatever, how they interrelate. And what we are defining as patient engagement is that I'm going to show you something I wrote about you, or that I'm going to actually let you contribute to that note and it's going to be yours. This goes back then to this notion that it's not about electronic health records and what the institution makes. It's really potentially about a longitudinal health record, something the person makes about themselves, and that then I contribute as a doc or as a device, as opposed to they get to contribute to some other node. You see what I'm saying? It's really exciting and interesting. I get kind of I just see this. Yeah, I'm watching this dynamic unfold, but I don't have to solve any of that necessarily. I mean, but what we have to do at ONC is think through what are the policy and technology challenges that will arise, and how do we facilitate and enable the expectations of our boss, which is the people in the country. That's who, you know, making sure that they get what they should get, if they're supported for health is where we're trying to go. And that's the arc of that is long and challenging, but really fun and exciting, because I think technology is going to give people a lot more opportunity to be empowered.
So Dr. DeSalvo, what advice would you give someone who's thinking about a career in public service?
Oh, do it. It's so wonderful. I've had the chance to serve in one way or another through most of my life. I had a mother who always was in service in some way or another, so it was a model. She was a model for us. This work in government is, you wake up with this sense of responsibility and accountability to everyone in a way that you don't have. Even when I was a physician, I still had a panel of patients, a group of folks that were my own, or in academics, I had faculty and their patients. But this is different. This is just a way of knowing that you're going to be able to make a difference and an impact, you hope, on people's lives that you would have never met, and do it in such a way that you have them always as your prime responsibility and goal, and not another agenda. And here's what else I think people should know, especially about ONC, and now I'm learning about OASH. The people who work in government are remarkable. They're bright and dedicated, and they work very hard for the American people. I can tell you with full confidence that that's why they get up and come to work. And so that's a good thing to know as a taxpayer. On the other hand, that when I arrived here, that was the case. It is true, though, that that all government's different. And I guess if I'm giving out advice, I think one of the working at the federal level has been terrific in many ways. I loved working at the municipal level in city government. It's very real and tangible. You're in the grocery store with the people that you're writing policy about or educating. So it's the feedback loop is tight, and that's great because it really helps you know how you're doing. So I think people should consider working in public service in some way. There's lots of reward no matter the level that you're in, and I hope everyone has a chance to do it at some time in their life.
Well, thank you for coming in today. It's been a pleasure having you. Wonderful conversation. But more importantly, I'd like to thank you for your dedicated service to the country.
Thank you very much, Michael. It's been my pleasure. Listen, I want to make sure folks know that in addition to the public comment period we have on the strategic plan, we have a roadmap for interoperability coming out that we want people to weigh in on. It'll be out end of January, early February, and it'll overlap with our annual meeting, which is February 2nd and 3rd here in Washington. And anyone's welcome. Sign up at healthit.gov.
This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with Dr. Karen DeSalvo, National Coordinator for Health Information Technology within the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Be sure to join us next week for another informative, insightful, and in-depth conversation on improving government effectiveness. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Michael Keegan, and thanks for joining us.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.